Hey all, Alon here. So we're not doing a normal podcast this week, fucking international break. But I did sit down with a couple dudes from FB Ref, my favorite stat site, for a quick little fireside chat. And we will be back on Thursday for a Patreon pod. So yeah, enjoy and see you then. Okay, welcome to another FMLFL Fireside Chat. This is Alon, and I am joined by Adam Dorowski, head of user experience for FB Ref, as well as Dan Hirsch, who's a developer at FB Ref. What's up, guys? How we doing?
Good. How you doing, Alan?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So this is sort of an FB Ref party. We're huge fans of the site. I think a lot of the FPL Fantasy Premier League community has latched onto it as well. Why don't we start with what you guys do there? Adam, what does head of user experience at FB Ref entail?
Yeah, so, well, FB Ref is part of Sports Reference. We have a whole bunch of other sites like Baseball Reference, Basketball Reference, and FB Ref is our newest and smallest but growing site. And it launched a few years ago. I don't know the exact date, Dan. You might know that.
June 18th, 2018, I believe.
Nice. Yeah, so I've been full-time at Sports Reference less than a year, but I was consulting with them during the development of FBref. So what does head of UX mean? So basically, I'm talking to users, finding out what's working, what's not, designing new features, running those by new users, running them by old users, just finding out what works across the site, what people want, what we're able to get for them. And yeah, designing and chipping and doing it all over again. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Dan, what about you?
So I'm the primary developer for FB Ref, but we have a number of developers at Sports Reference, and we work across sports. We work on multiple projects that aren't just, one or specific to an individual sport. But yeah, basically all the features and stuff that go through FB Ref, I'm the one working on them, I guess.
behind the scenes magic.
And sure.
I'm curious, like, how'd you guys get into sort of the stats world, the soccer world, and then the Sports Reference world? Like, Dan, why don't we just start with you?
Sure. I mean, I come from a baseball background, so I've always been into baseball and baseball statistics. But as far as soccer, I got into soccer, man, 15 years ago now, maybe 12 years ago. I was a big Ronaldinho fan with Barca.
Nice.
So yeah, I kind of went away from it when I had young kids, and then came back when I got the job with FB Ref. And I'm always attracted to analyzing a sport, not just not just watching it as a fan. So I'm always into trying to determine what's good, who's good, using stats.
Awesome. What about you, Adam?
Yeah, I also came from a baseball background. That was years and years and years of baseball. And I was the kid that, poured over the back of the baseball cards and read the Baseball Digest and everything. And I never followed soccer until about 2014 when my son got into it. He kind of went from baseball to soccer, and I started digging into it. And I used basically the stats to learn about it, because that's how I consume baseball. I'm like, that's how I get to consume soccer then. So of course I found that there weren't all that many stats. So that led to a lot of opportunities to learn about this while, developing FB Ref and talking to users and learning about the game. So it was an interesting way to learn about the game, but very fulfilling.
Yeah. I bet if someone made a pie chart of like, how did Americans get into European soccer, it'd be, stats, FIFA, and I don't know, something like that. So fantasy, of course, fantasy. So I figured we'd just start with like how I mostly use the site and take it from there. So I usually, when I'm going to FB Ref, it's usually to look at individual players, of course, fantasy perspective and their statistics. I usually stick with what I'm comfortable with, which is XG, non-penalty XG, XA. A few other basic statistics, but I know there's so much more there. It's kind of overwhelming, I think, when people first go to the site and they're sort of new to the reference sites in general. It's just like a lot of action. So I wanted to talk about some specific stats, what they mean, how they work, figure out maybe what fantasy players can glean from them. And I wanted to start with, I think, what is unique to FB Ref, which is the goal and shot creation stats, because I've always had sort of a hunch that there's something there from, you know, a fantasy perspective, but I'm not really sure what. Dan, do you maybe want to tell us like what GCA, SCA are and how they work?
Sure. They're basically the, SCA is shot creating action, and GCA is a subset of that. And it's basically any shot creating action that results in a goal. And they're basically the two actions that occur before a shot is taken. So, and that could be a pass, you know, which we're all used to with, you know, with assists, but it could also be a dribble. It could be, on the defensive end as a tackle. It could be drawing a foul. It could be a shot that's rebounded. So basically any action that a player does that ultimately results in a shot taken, and they earn a shot creating action for. Adam, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was looking at the Man City Liverpool match just to kind of get some GCA SCA numbers from that, just to try to explain it. And Bernardo Silva had 6 shot creating actions. None of them resulted in a goal creating action. He had like the pass before a key pass on like 3 occasions. Once he was fouled to set up a free kick, that got him a shot creating action. And then one time he had a dribble and a pass before the shot. So he actually got both of the shot creating actions on that. None of them resulted in a goal. Mo Salah, on the other hand, had 5 shot creating actions, but 4 of them were goal creating actions. How did he do that when there were only 2 goals and he scored one of them? So I'll walk through that. Before the Sadio Mane goal, he had the dribble and the pass. So he had both of the actions before that goal. And then before his own goal, he had 2 separate dribbles where he took on separate players and dribbled past them. So he actually had the goal and both of the goal creating actions from it. And then later in the match, he had a key pass that from a Fabinho shot that was blocked. So that just kind of gives an example of what we're talking about specifically with these types of actions.
Right. I've always felt that it's kind of a way to, it's, I don't know, in my head, it's always been sort of like, these are all of the avenues that a player may contribute to goals, you know, and that's what we're always looking for in fantasy. For the most part, it's shots, goals, assists, that kind of stuff. And to me, this has always been sort of a stat that's like a wider scope than, you know, the XG, which is just the shot, or, you know, the XA similarly. And it's sort of like, this guy is super involved, and even though he may not be getting the stats now, like based on what he's doing on the pitch may lead to goals in the future. That's kind of sort of how I've always like thought about it. I don't know if that's right.
Right. I thought about, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say that, you know, coming into soccer and realizing that the basic stats, there's very few of them with just goals, assists, yeah, and, you know, maybe tackles or in cards. And we basically just wanted a way to show who's helping create goals, you know, in addition to just the one assist. You know, we're also kind of used to hockey where there's 2 assists, you know, just trying to give more credit where it's due, you know, in that progress to eventually scoring a goal or taking a shot.
Adam, do you have something you want to say?
Yeah, I was going to bring up the hockey example where I think it's just inspired by that, where there's the 2 passes before the shot, where this is the couple actions. Not always going to be a pass, which was something that we were able to dig into from the data where, you know, if somebody wins a tackle that then leads to a goal, we're able to document that too. So it's a little richer than the hockey assist, I think, even.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that because we always call it a hockey assist on our podcast when they didn't quite get the assist, they get the second assist. There's a bunch of shooting stats as well. I mean, like I said, I kind of focus on XG, usually non-penalty XG, but what do we learn from the other many shooting stats there that aren't already basically included in XG, which, you know, I think has sort of a lot of these things in its formula, but, you know, there's a shots on target percentage, there's goals per shot on target, distance, you know, I just don't know what to like do with some of these. Adam, you're smiling like you got something to say.
I'll be honest, like a lot of these, I'm trying to think of an application for fantasy purposes. I always think it's interesting to see like who takes their shots from closer or longer range, or, you know, maybe if you're facing a player you have is facing a team that concedes a high number of shots, you might go for the guy that that has the better conversion rate or something like that. I haven't done any studies to prove that out, but it just seems like something that you might look at too in terms of just volume of shots, but also the conversion rate there.
Right.
I like to look at the NPXG net, which is basically just goals minus XG to see who's overperforming or underperforming. You know, unless you're someone like Messi who seems to regularly overperform, most players will, you know, regress to the mean, I guess. So I like to see who's, you know, and I guess this, you know, could be applicable to fantasy, where, you know, if you have a guy who's scoring more goals than they are, you know, getting XG for, then, you know, that might slow down in the future.
Yeah, it's a good time to bring that up, because on our most recent normal fantasy podcast, we had a big argument about Timo Werner. I was sort of on the side that he had a historic bad finishing year last season. And this season he'll probably be more back to normal, which is like average or maybe slightly above average based on the Bundesliga numbers. So it is interesting with fantasy, though, because like one season you could just be hot the entire season, or you could just be cold the entire season. So it's almost like it's almost more useful to look at that net from, you know, past seasons to be like to readjust where they'll be in the future, rather than like in the current moment. It's hard to know, like, is that going to continue? Is that going to stop? Or, you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, he's only played 390 so far, but he's already underperforming again this year.
I know.
That's a tough one too, with the sample sizes where we're coming from baseball. We've got these like clean 162 game samples. I haven't figured out what exactly is a reliable sample size for these types of things yet.
Yeah, I think that's a problem in the entire, you know, soccer stats community is, you know, I've had like Michael Kaley and Goodman on here before too, and they're also, you know, from a baseball background. I mean, I'm wearing a baseball t-shirt right now, and it's just, yeah, we're so used to just, you know, 600 plate appearances or whatever, and it's just like you know exactly what's going on really most of the time. But I wanted to look at keepers. I think it's sort of interesting in sort of a similar way. There's like the advanced goalkeeping stats, which also takes into account post shot XG, which I think is the only area on the site where post shot XG is actually implemented. You can't see that on outfield players, I don't think. And I'm just wondering, like, what is this telling us? Is it similar to that net XG? Is it sort of just year to year, different guys are hot, or is it more consistent than that? Like, are there keepers who are regularly overperforming the advanced stats? Are they predictable? Like, I don't know if you guys have stuff to say about that.
Well, you go, Dan.
So I think getting back to that sample size issue, I mean, I think it's even more of an issue with keepers, because, I mean, they're really only seeing so many shots over the course of a, you know, 38 game season. So I ran a correlation just to see like if it was predicting certain things that could be applicable to fantasy. And with the small sample size in mind, for clean sheets, the previous season's clean sheet percentage actually did a better job of predicting the next season's clean sheet percentage than PSXG did. And I think that, you know, that has to do a lot with the fact that there's a lot more to just the keeper quality that goes into a clean sheet. Obviously, you know, defense and tactics go into that as well. And as far as like save percentage for the next season, it's actually the same correlation from one season to the next as the previous season save percentage. So you would think that PSXG would be a better predictor than just raw save percentage, but they're equal to each other. But if we had a bigger sample, I wonder if you know, we'd have different results with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's sort of, I sometimes think of the advanced numbers as more descriptive than predictive in a weird way. Like, you can look at a season and say, like, this is what's happening so far right now. It's not necessarily what's indicative of what's going to happen in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. I'm a Dortmund fan, so I apologize for the Bundesliga example here, but we were going through some goalkeeper issues last season, and some people were saying, oh, basically, according to FBref, if you take Wolfsburg's Kun Castiles and just plop him into Dortmund's squad, you know, all of a sudden everything is solved, but it's not really how it works. It's just descriptive of the types of shots that these goalkeepers faced. And so, yeah, the post-shot XG plus minus is really just the net, how many goals more or less they saved than expected. So if you put them on a different team, they're going to be facing completely different scenarios. So right. It's not really a predictive thing in that way.
Right. Yeah. Let's maybe jump over to also just individual player thing, which is the similar play. Like the first thing you see when you're on a player page is sort of the scouting report and the similar players list. Maybe let's start with the scouting report because it's on the top. But I was curious sort of like why, first of all, why those numbers for each player? You know, it's different for an attacker or a midfielder or a defender or a keeper.
Yeah, so like I said, with part of my role is talking to people, and we talked to a ton of people for this one over the course of a few weeks, just to get an idea of what metrics people wanted to see, what groupings they wanted to see, whether we should just show attacking numbers for attackers, defending numbers for defenders. And the more we... It's funny because a lot of people thought that they wanted just attacking numbers for attackers and defensive numbers for defenders, but when we showed them... what we were working on, they were like, okay, that's interesting because now we can see like the relative defensive qualities even of an attacking forward. See, I can give you this example because he's in the Premier League now. Josh Sargent was an interesting one where his attacking numbers were like 10-20 percentile. But you looked at his defensive numbers for a forward and he was like way, like almost off the charts. And yeah, there are, of course, these attacking fullbacks that look completely the opposite, where their attacking numbers are off the charts and they're like, yeah, do they even defend? It's like, well, they play for, you know, these high possession teams that don't really have to do much defending. So that's why we ended up kind of taking this set of attacking numbers, this set of ball progression / possession numbers, and the set of defensive numbers, and just use the same ones for the same players. So you can see how they compare to their own peers within the top five leagues and at that positional group on a consistent basis. And I don't know, I think it worked out pretty well, but we're always willing to hear dissenting opinions on the stats that we chose.
I was just going to point out that even though we do limit to a certain number of stats on like the player's main page, there are ways to see their percentiles for basically all the stats that we include on player pages. And there's a deeper dive you can take into the scouting reports, and you can also do it over specific seasons. If you wanted to see the 1920 Premier League season, you could do that.
Know that. So that you access that with the View Complete scouting report, and then you can choose the seasons.
Correct.
Gotcha. I've actually never done that. Nice. I knew I'd pick up some new things there. I was gonna say after you spoke, Adam, I'm pretty sure you're talking about Rafael Guerrero.
That's my guy. Yes.
I knew it. I knew it all the way. Dortmund kits gave it away. And then what about, right? So right below it is sort of the similar players, and I'm much more, it's much more like, I don't know, behind the scenes on how that's exactly working. Because there's no like numbers there. It's just a list of names. So what's sort of behind that, and how do you come up with those names and whatnot, Dan?
So basically just takes the player that you're looking at, and it looks at their percentiles of the stats that we're displaying on the main page, not all the stats. And it compares to basically every player that's in that pool of players, just sees which players have the closest percentiles, you know, which players match up the closest. And it ranks them from, you know, the most similar to the top 10 most similar.
But is it like, so if I'm looking at like Mo Salah or something, is it equally weighted that he's in the third percentile for tackles as it is that he's in the 98th percentile for goals? Or, you know, right. Because that doesn't really like matter. You know, I don't care about other players who are in the third percentile of tackles as much as the goal scoring stuff, you know?
Yeah, currently we're not, you know, adding any like special weight for like, gotcha, for forwards, you know, and any goal scoring, you know, and any bonus for that, you know, it'll also, you know, if they're applying the same number of pressures as, you know, another player, then yeah, they'll be a little bit more similar, I guess.
Gotcha. Interesting. Cool. I think there's also the player comparison, I feel like, is relatively new and something that I haven't really looked at that much myself. But I'm wondering, like, if you're, is there any other way? I think the way I sent you guys beforehand, is there any, what can we learn from this outside of just, is one player better than another player at, you know, the exact same statistics? Or I don't know, what, how did you guys envision people using the compare player page? You know, whether it's within leagues or players in the past or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, it can be done for a number of things. Obviously, things are going to vary based on the system teams play. It can be pretty useful for like comparing midfielders with center backs within the same team because they play the same system. But yeah, sure. you can. And I mean, the main case that people have accessed it for is, you know, I want to compare Ronaldo and Messi and see their stats. And, you know, while you have to take some stats with a grain of salt because of the system that they're played within, there's still things that happen. Like these are the tackles that these players made. These are the goals that they scored. They might play a different position. They might be in a completely different system, but these are the things that happen. So as long as you view it through that lens, you're okay. If you try to use this player had this many progressive passes more than this player, and that's why this player is better. Those arguments are always going to fall apart. That's same thing, you know, you're going to get with baseball stats or any other sport. It's like there's no one stat that you can grab, but you can use them to compare, you know, well, you know, this player is making this many key passes per 90 minutes. You know, how does that compare to some of the other big playmakers? And just allows you to line them up next to each other.
Yep. Yep, that's useful. I'm curious, maybe kicking out a little bit to fantasy. I don't know if either of you guys play any sort of fantasy La Liga or fantasy Bundesliga or anything like that, but I'm just curious, if you were to come in and sort of start a fantasy Premier League team tomorrow, or it's international break, take a week and a half and start a fantasy Premier League team, like where do you guys think you'd begin? You know, just what would be, you know, the points are basically goals, assists, clean sheets. Those are the majority of the points scored in the game. Defenders are the only ones that get clean sheets and everything else is equal. Where would you begin?
Probably finding the people that are most likely to have the minutes to get the clean sheets. So, I mean, obviously you'd look for bargains based on the salaries that each player has in the FPL. Yep. I'd probably start with looking for the bargains on the defensive lines to see who's going to get you the most clean sheets, because obviously that's probably the biggest bang, I would think, out of your defensive line. I was looking at, like, I've never played FPL, but I was like, oh, so you could play like, I don't know, like a 3-2-5 or something like that, and it would work. Is that what people do?
There's a max, so you can have a max of 3 forwards, a max of 5 midfielders, a max of 5 defenders, and you have to make, you know, 11 out of that, or 10 plus your keeper. So you can do a 5-3-2, you can do a 3-4-3 would be the most common, or a, you know, a 3-5-2 or something like that. But yeah, there's maximums, or everyone would just have like every best midfielder or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can jump in anytime you want, Dan, but probably making some sort of formula to like try to, you know, this player is probably worth this many XG plus XA in a game. So, you know, and then look at opponents too.
Yeah.
I've also never played FPL, but, and I guess one of the reasons why I haven't dove into it yet is because I knew if I did, then I would probably spend way too much trying to like devise some sort of like formula, or, you know, some sort of method that will get me the most optimal team. But I think I'd probably try to pick players who are, you know, on City or Liverpool, you know, top of the table teams. I know there's a max of 3 per team that you can have. So, yeah. I mean, I know that's difficult to do. One of the things I was looking at when I was looking at the goalkeepers is it looks like there's a break even point with goalkeepers for save percentage at 60% with the 1 point per 3 saves and 2 point or one negative 1 point per 2 goals allowed. So basically 60% is the break even. And so obviously you want clean sheets, but if you're not going to get a clean sheet, then you almost want someone who has a high save percentage, but also has a lot of shots on target against. So, yeah. So I'm, you know, it's almost better to have someone who's in like the 70s in save percentage, but also sees a lot of shots, because then you can maybe rack up a couple extra points that way as a goalkeeper.
Dude, you are a natural. I think you're spot on that you would spend way too much time, but I think you'd also find success. Like, yeah, that's totally right. I mean, you know, I know the prices may not mean anything, but like the, you know, Ederson, Allison, et cetera, are 6 million. And usually the promoted keepers, or the, you know, teams expected to be in the relegation race, are around 4.5 million. And goalkeeping in general is the smallest range between like the top players and the bottom players in terms of points. And so, yeah, most people start with just a 4 or 5 keeper and just hope they get a lot of saves, hope they get like a lucky penalty save, hope they are Brentford and keep some clean sheets out of nowhere. And then, you know, you're cooking with gas there. But yeah, it's just, I was just curious like where you guys would attack that from, because but yeah, it's good instincts. Listen, I mean, I thought this might be an hour, but that's, I think, most of what I have to talk about, unless I miss some, you know, kick-ass features that I didn't know about or that you guys want to, you know, show me or talk about or something. I think that's like a pretty good place to wrap up. I don't know, Adam, do you have anything you want to throw in?
Yeah, I'll just throw in that, like, we're looking to talk to people all the time. So if you start using this for FPL and you have some thoughts, you can feel free to reach out to us at fbref.com, or me personally at FoosballTwit on Twitter. DMs are open. But yeah, we love hearing from people, and I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, and I'll add that there's obviously a lot that we can that you can find at FBref, and a lot of our data comes from StatsBum. So if you're maybe looking for, take an even deeper dive into some of the stats that were shown in there, you know, consider looking at StatsBum as well, because they also offer some more granular looks, you know, at some of the stats.
Awesome. They also have a lot more leagues than we offer, yeah, as well. So
you guys got plenty of leagues. I don't think there's any person listening to this podcast in the world that's like, my league's not covered, what the hell? Like, there's way too many.
Well, you never know. Once Dan starts getting into FPL, he's probably going to start scouting Norway and all these other leagues who might come to the Premier League.
True, true, true. All right, we'll bring you back on then. But yeah, thanks so much, guys, and have a good one.
You as well. Take care.